hubbub, a chaotic din caused by a crowd of people.
Hello again and welcome to Hubbub for the Directors Hub Founders Support Club and Series 4 and Episode 6. Today we are joined by Andrew Abaza, Five Focus, and with my co-host who's joined us for the entire day is Faye Miller of Gingerbread World, co-hosting this podcast with me. And my name's Sonny Cutting of Network Express. And today with Andrew, we're going to be talking about mediation versus arbitration versus litigation. So what's the difference? And welcome, Andrew.
Hello, thank you. What's the difference? Well, mediation, in simple terms, is cheaper. It's faster, it can be done in a day. But I think one of the most important things is it's actually, it's the parties themselves who decide the outcome. Everything else, someone else tells them what to do, like a judge or an arbitrator. So, and I think that's absolutely key. I found out in life, make your own decisions, not have other people tell you what to do. And that's a fundamental difference between the other forms of arbitration, litigation, whatever. And that's, to me, the most important thing as well.
So how did you get into mediation? Because I know before you became a mediator, you were a business coach for the best part of 10 years. So what made you want to make the switch to mediation?
Well, I've been doing ad hoc mediation anyway as a business coach, a lot of it, both internally in organisations and between custom suppliers. You'd be amazed at what goes on there, or perhaps not. So there's a lot of stuff going on there. And I found myself acting as a mediator anyway.
Okay.
And I got a lot out of it. It was a very satisfying thing to do. And that's why I moved into a trained mediator.
Fair enough. So how long does it take to become a mediator? What sort of training do you have to go through to do it?
Well, apart from the fact I'm brilliant anyway.
Obviously, that goes without saying.
I
have to have
in.
A natural aptitude for it, do you?
Absolutely, yes, thank you. That's a better phrase, thank you. First of all, anyone can be a mediator.
Yeah.
So I could have just called myself a mediator and off you go. And I had some experience in it, but I thought I'd better get some proper training in what is it, what are the proper processes. And that's what I did. I went on a training course, an online one for a week, where you train to follow the proper processes and systems. Mm. And what is more dramatic for me, I actually got assessed.
Yeah.
That's the first time I had to be for years. and it had to be accredited and then moderated as well by the Civil Mediation Council, which is a proper national body. So I'm a properly registered mediator. But in addition to that, I had to have a period of experience for several months of actually doing live mediations with someone to make sure I could actually do the job.
So it's quite a lengthy process then to become a mediator.
Oh yes, oh yes.
They don't just accept any old Tom, Dick or Harry to do it then.
Thank
be
you
careful,
for that.
Be careful.
I couldn't possibly, you might think that I couldn't possibly comment. The short answer is yes. I mean, anyone can be mediator, do it properly. I wanted to do it properly like when I trained to be a business coach, to actually offer a proper service, not just wing it and hope for the best.
Yeah. Well, you must have some of that. You obviously have that skill set that you're able to mediate between people and get them, I suppose, talking to each other, at least not shouting at each other and coming to a mutually agreeable conclusion. Prior to business coaching, prior to mediation, what was your background before that? Do you think any of that helped inform what you do now?
Yeah, I think it did. I mean, as you know, I'm 110, so going back a bit. there's sort of big events, big things I did. One is I started life as a warehouse manager with United Biscuits.
Yeah.
And that was in Park Royal in West London. We had I don't know if you know Park Royal, but it's a multi-ethnic workforce, unionised, piecework, five full shift operations, so quite a potboiler. Mm. And I was put in there at a young age. I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
But I learned then how to actually get people to solve disputes. And I'm talking about very serious stuff on the floor, face-to-face stuff.
Yeah.
So I started my trade then, if you like, learning techniques to use then. And then I moved into, we set our own business up here, and that was pretty volatile. So I learned it then. And then, of course, subsequently, I worked for a trade body, which is also solving disputes. Everyone seems to solve disputes. That's weird, isn't it? And then into setting up another business up. So I've had to learn the hard way how to actually get people to agree to do things which they don't want to do, or worse, they have very serious arguments about.
Yeah. How serious are the arguments then, some of these? Are we talking like, you know, physical fist fights and stuff? And
In the warehouse, yes. Yeah. We're talking someone attacks someone with a broom handle,
oh,
which
blimey.
Sounds funny, but it isn't. What you learn then is when you're in a dispute, like here we're talking.
Yeah.
But on a shop floor, you know, you can move around, can't you?
Yeah.
But what I learned then was get very close to people, not grab them.
Yeah.
But literally within about a foot.
Yeah.
And being close to people really worked because they weren't back away.
What? Because it helped calm them down or stop them.
Well,
from
it's losing, not losing face.
Yeah.
And that's a key thing in all mediation activities,
yeah.
so people don't lose face.
Yeah.
And I learned that then.
There's a lot to do with the psychology of it and how people think and feel, isn't there? Because people, I think the key thing, as you say, about mediation is getting people to sit down and talk through and come to a mutually agreeable resolution. They might not be super happy with it, but at least it's something both parties can agree on. But people, it's a very, you know, sometimes topics are very emotive, and it's like getting into that psychology and drilling down into why people behave the way they do and how you can, I suppose, get around that and get them to calm down.
Yes, it's absolutely key, and I think people forget that emotion. We're not robots.
Yeah.
And somehow dealing with that feeling. What I find as a mediator, and before that, you have to discharge the emotion.
Yeah.
Because if you think some's a little whatever,
yeah.
that's all you're going to think about.
Yeah.
So you have to discharge how people feel.
Yeah.
And that's what I do as a mediator, have done before. Let people vent, which you can do in mediation. You can't do in court. And you can't do it elsewhere. Let them vent. I mean, to a limit.
Yeah.
And then once they've vented, they then calm down and you start to get down to what matters. So
how does the process start then? If someone comes to you and says they want you to mediate, how does it work?
It works in two ways. Yeah. I do get calls direct say, I want to go to mediation. I find sometimes I have to refer to solicitor because it's a point of law.
Yeah.
Or that there's already papers served.
Yeah.
So that happens. And that tends to be the process then to get referral back. The way the process works is that people have to agree to mediation. Sounds obvious, but they do. And so while one might have to make sure the other does. And what I do, I have a process I've learned the hard way in life, not to accept everything you get in writing or people tell you. I speak to both parties beforehand, not about the actual content, but about the process itself to make sure they understand what's going to happen and have clear expectations. And that they're ready to roll, and just to deal with it. So that when they come into the actual mediation process itself, it's actually they're there with a common expectation. Yeah.
Do you sometimes encounter resistance from one party before you get to that mediation stage? When you go to both of them, as you say, and see if they're okay, do you sometimes get one that's like, "Yes, I absolutely want to go to mediation," and the other one going, "No, they're a complete arsehole. I'm going to court and I'm having my day in court."
Yes.
And then how do you get around that, basically?
Well, that's a simple answer. Sorry, Faye, I couldn't
that's
help
all right.
That.
No, it's fine. How do you get around it?
First, in some cases, you can't.
Yeah. It's just some people are just
some
adamant,
people won't
they?
Go to mediation, and that's it. And there has to be another route.
So
it usually ends in tears, but that's the way it goes. Sometimes they can be difficult. And what I mean by that, usually with their solicitors who not keen for whatever reason. Well, I'm not sure it's the citizen or the client, not sure, but they can be a bit stiff.
Yeah.
And they're only going to mediation because they probably have to because the courts are now encouraging mediation. There was an appeal court ruling end of last year which said that mediations, you know, people, courts can order mediation.
Yeah.
It's not in breach of human rights. Believe it or not, someone made a complaint making people go to mediation what was a breach of their human rights.
Really?
Couldn't make this up, could you?
Blimey.
Yeah. And interesting on that, because it raises another point about mediation, is that it's voluntary.
Yeah.
People forget that. At any time in a mediation process, you can walk out.
Yeah.
And as a mediator, I'm not going to tell anyone why they walked out, or even they did walk out. I just said no settlement was reached. And people thought mediation, by being made to go to mediation, you've got to sit there and come to an agreement.
Yeah.
But you haven't.
Yeah. Can it be... might it be frowned upon? Say somebody goes to mediation, or they don't even go to mediation. They're offered it and they refuse it and say, "I'm not going to mediation." They go to court, and then the judge can look bad on them in court. They didn't try to resolve it at an earlier stage, shall I say? Will it reflect?
I have to use my words carefully here, but it's called unhelpful.
Yeah.
And what that means? All I say as a mediator is that no settlement was reached.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah.
And And that's it. So yeah. All the judge knows, no settlement was reached.
Okay.
And it raises another interesting point about mediation, is that once a mediation is complete, that's it.
Yeah.
I have no further state. I have no notes. I tear them all up. Yeah. I destroy the email records. I destroy everything.
So you sometimes don't know how these things, well, these disputes are, how they're resolved or not, as
no,
the case
well,
may
well
be.
If they're settled, I do. But if they carry on, no. Yeah. I have no interest. No, it's a wrong phrase to use.
I was going to say, is that not annoying sometimes? You just want to know what happened.
If things are settled, that's fine.
Yeah.
I know what happens. If they're not, I think it's very sad, usually. I mean, I've got a couple of cases where it's sad. I'll give an example, shall I?
Yes.
Otherwise I don't get arrested in the process. I was dealing with a tenant who was suing a very large commercial landowner, not here, in Brighton, elsewhere.
Okay.
And let's call him the landlord, for sake of argument. It's a public body.
Yeah.
Clearly didn't want to settle.
Yeah.
They were proud to go to court. And the tenant had a very good case. And I think that was sad. I wish I'd seen how that concluded.
Yeah.
But that's life. I draw a line. I have no interest in what happens afterwards. Otherwise, my role is purely to get a settlement, full stop.
Yeah.
Not before and after.
Yeah.
That's not my role. Someone else deals with that. Otherwise, you lose it.
I never understand why people do want to go to court, to be fair, because it's a hugely costly and long, drawn-out process.
And stressful.
And stressful, isn't it?
Huge. And people forget that, the stress, just coming on to that. This is my coaching bit coming into it. I can't help that. Is that it's massively, the emotion I find out when people come into mediation is huge. You can see it in their faces. I do it mostly by Zoom. They're really taut. You know, it's like a wire. And you're absolutely right. It's cost a fortune to go to court. What people forget, like if you go to county court, depending on the size of your claim, it's 10 grand before you even do anything.
Yeah.
Literally, just before you do anything, hand over 10 grand, if it depends on the size of claim. And also, you never get the outcome always you want. Even if you think you're going to win, you might not. You have a bad day, or the judge has a bad day in court, more likely. And you're right, going to court, I don't understand why people go. You don't get what you want. It costs you a fortune in solicitor's fees, never mind. And barristers, by the way, don't forget, writing appearance. In absolute bloody fortune. And of course, time. People forget, you know, I mean, we're all business owners here. Time. You can get money back, you can't get time back, and it takes up a lot of time to go to court, to read documents and all the rest of it. A lot of time.
It takes the focus away from, as you say, we're all business owners, and if you're focusing on that, it's a negative thing to focus on. It's not focusing on growing your business. Sometimes you have to draw a line under it and write it off, and then you can focus on the positive side of your business and growing your business. Whereas if you're putting all your energies into a dispute, you're not doing that growth side of things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it gobbles up more time than people think, reading papers. And of course, their attention is diverted elsewhere because you think this thing's at the back of your mind.
Yeah.
You're thinking about other things when you should be thinking about going out and flogging your business or your product.
Yeah. Well, even like, even when you think you're not thinking about stuff like that, that's when it comes back to haunt you or bite you on the bum, and you wake up at 2 a.m. full of anxiety or whatever because you know you've got this dispute hanging over you.
Absolutely. And I was dealing with a dispute with a household and a contractor.
Yeah.
I put it that way. Not here, again, elsewhere. And you could tell that the contractor was all over the place because they're trying to deal with this particular. It went to mediation, but they're quite serious issues and health issues. Affects their health a lot of the time.
Gosh, it's quite involved. So tell us more about the types of situations where mediation occurs. Because I know you've done you're doing some neighbour disputes, but a lot of them are commercial disputes as well. Yeah. So tell us a bit more about the kind of situations where mediation might be called for.
Just come back to neighbourhood. They're the most emotional ones.
Yeah.
But we'll come back to that maybe. that's another story. But commercial disputes. I mean, for example, I mentioned contractor and household is quite common.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where the householder says, something is not done, and the builder says, yes, it was, and it tends to get escalate after that.
Yeah.
So involved in mediation that got settled. That's good. I think you mentioned earlier, they might not love each other in mediation, but at least they've drawn a line.
Yeah.
And that's what matters. I'm not there to make people love each other. That's a separate skill set, which I'm not sure I've got. I'm not sure I've got that.
That's next level mediation.
It's next level mediation. That's an interesting business proposition,
yeah,
isn't it?
There you go. Found
I'll
your
think
niche.
About that. I wonder how to go about doing that anyway.
Well,
I'm thinking about a new business plan to think of.
Exactly. Another revenue income stream or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, can we go there? It sounds much more interesting. But
mediationmatch.com or something. I don't know.
Yeah, think of that. Sorry, I was diverted thinking about that. Yeah, no, other media I was involved in, for example, how should I say, it's a couple who in what the law calls a romantic relationship but not married. The law's fantastic language, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they were together for quite 10 years.
Yeah.
They invested about nearly £1 million worth of property,
yeah,
buy to let. And you know what's coming next? Romantic relationship went down the tubes.
Yeah.
And huge bust-ups over who did what and who owned what in the property, and that was a day long. That's very unusual. It was a full day. But settled. They agreed what to do. But that was, you can imagine the emotional charge in that, and some of the points of what they're going to agree to took a bit of time of sorting out, and I mentioned the tenant landlord one, which I've come to. So it's that type of thing that comes through. And a final one, just give an example. Mm. Someone bought a house or tried to buy a house for about $370,000.
Yeah,
that's cheap these days, isn't it?
Right. It is. Yeah, get a house around here for that.
I did ask you, where was it? Can I get involved? And the vendor's solicitor walked off with the money.
Oh my God! Yeah.
No.
And, oh yeah, big time. And so that this was about 5-6 years ago. And it got very complicated, and without going to the gory details, the potential buyer was suing the insurance company because he didn't get his money back.
Yeah.
And so it's odd. So that was actually face to face. I don't even know these beautiful London offices where it's all glass and steel beams.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to go through 100 yards before you get to the first secretary. You know, that type of place. It was held in that environment, and they did settle, but it was he didn't get all his money back.
Wow.
But it was a particularly difficult one because the time lapsed. There were points in law. They had a leading counsel there, which was interesting, and really nice bloke actually. He's not what I thought. He's a stereotype of solicitor, you know, like pinstripe suit, a very hollow cheeks, but really nice. So that's the type of variation you get right across the spectrum of amount. And what's coming up?
I was going to say, in courts, it obviously takes months and months and months, and sometimes even years, to resolve issues and so forth. With mediation, I assume it's within a few hours, or can be done in that time.
Yeah, 4 hours tops usually.
Wow, that's amazing.
One day, I mentioned the case earlier because there was, you can imagine. There's all kinds of stuff flying around that which had to be dealt with. It's settled. Obviously, there's a run up. You know, it's not just hello, here I am, and how about it. I mean, there's a simple process to follow beforehand to make sure you know what they're coming in for, and that's it. Yep. Usually within a couple of hours, 4 hours, if it's particularly stuff going on, a day tops. So it's fast.
That's brilliant. Great. Because from a mental health point of view, when they're already massively stressed out, you know, that just alleviates that whole problem and pushes it to one side.
Absolutely,
doesn't it?
It does, and it draws a line, finishes it, and that's why that's one of the big drivers why I do this, because it's all about drawing a line, moving on, because if you get stuck in stuff, it burns you out, and you know, everything you do becomes prejudiced. So it's all about moving on. I learned this as a business coach in my private life. It's all about drawing a line, moving on, and that's why I love what I do, because it enables people to do that. It's great.
You must get a lot of satisfaction out of it then, when you, even if the resolution isn't quite, you know, like there's always, if there's two sides, one party wants to win, the other one wants to win somewhere, and they're going to meet in the middle, so neither's going to be 100% happy, but to reach that point where they're both in agreement must be pretty satisfying.
It's fantastic. Yeah, I say I'm not here to make people love each other, although I'm thinking rapidly about that.
Yeah, you never know.
Are you thinking about this though?
I'd better write it down. So, but yeah, it is. It's a matter of it's huge satisfaction. That's why I do what I do, because it No one is totally satisfied, but they get on with it, and draw a line. It makes a big difference to their lives.
So one of the things you've touched upon is the difference in cost. Like, we know that going to court takes a long time, but it also costs an awful lot of money in solicitors and barristers' fees and so on. So how much does mediation cost by comparison?
It's minuscule amounts. Unfortunately, I should charge more.
Yeah.
To give you an idea, a four-hour mediation, which is quite, quite hefty, it's £475 plus VAT per party.
Yeah, which is
that says everything. And I nearly said quick and dirty, but that's the wrong phrase to use. But if it's a faster one, you're talking about a couple of hundred quid, something like that, per party. Both parties pay an equal amount. Otherwise, you can imagine. Because the other key point, I don't work. I'm entirely independent. Yeah. I don't work for either one or the other.
Yeah. When you go into mediation, do you ever get, I suppose, like you said just there, you said you're entirely independent, neutral. You're there to facilitate, not tell them what to do. They've got to reach the agreement. Mm. Do you get sometimes them trying to persuade you to take their side? And how do you deal with that?
During the mediation, I'll be asked the question, can you, what should we do? The way the mediation process works very quickly is I speak to each party in their own private rooms and then they bring them together.
Yeah.
And you go through an iterative process on that. Is that sometimes in the private rooms they say, what should we do or what's the right way of doing it? And I say, I'm not here to tell you about it. I just say, it's not my role. I make that clear right at the start.
Yeah.
So they have a total clarity on what my role is. I don't advise them. I don't. If they want to go and sit in a tree, that's fine. no one's yet said that, but if they do, that's fine. I'm not there to tell what's right, wrong, good or bad. It's up to them to decide. So I tell them, and they're advised beforehand.
So they don't try and sway you one way or the other.
No, not as the rules are clear at the start, and there's an agreement at the start which I make them both sign. is where that's clearly spelled out.
So have you ever had to stop mediation at all for any reason because people will not,
agree,
submit to it properly? Agree to those rules.
Agree what, to the actual rules?
To the rules.
No, hasn't happened. This is why that I have to have a pre-briefing to make sure absolute clarity about that, so they know what the rules are.
I suppose if they're both paying and they've got skin in the game, shall we say, then they're more likely to sit down and
Once they've signed the agreement and give it, I won't go ahead unless they pay me up front. Good business practice anyway, isn't it,
definitely.
As we all know, is that that they both know what it is. They pay the money and they know what to expect.
Well, I hope I never have to go to mediation, but you never know.
Well, I'd rather go to mediation than court.
Yeah, that is true.
It is for all kinds of reasons. Yeah.
That's partly why I do love the Directors Hub, to be fair. Not because of that reason, but because I have all of these experts, in their own fields, and great support mechanism.
Yeah, that's right. And mediation really does stop things going, where they shouldn't be going, quite frankly. It really does.
Yeah.
And even you get emotion, where people say, I'm going to have my day in court and tell them what bastards they are.
Yeah.
And you won't be allowed to do it. It's a very expensive sentence if they get that far.
Yeah.
Very expensive.
Gosh, it is, isn't it? No, I wouldn't want to go to court at all. So, mediation, obviously, you've told us a bit about what mediation is, but do you find that there are some common misconceptions around mediation that you come across?
Yes. One is it's a bit like arbitration, for example, or a judge where the mediator tells people or gives them advice, makes a judgment.
Yeah.
And that's the most common one where people think you're in there to advise them on what to do or not to do. Yeah. And that's the single biggest thing I get.
Yeah.
The other one that does come across that I have to keep reinforcing is that mediation process is absolutely private.
Yeah.
People can say whatever they want in a mediation process, and it won't be, can't be legally, what's the word for it, tell anybody outside, including on social media, by the way. So it's absolutely private. And including, the only way I can be compelled to say what happened in mediation, if a judge orders me, which hasn't happened yet, I hope it never does.
if people do say stuff, if they were in mediation and then they've sort of did put it up wherever on social media, is that considered contempt of court then?
Effectively.
Yeah. Which is quite serious, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I had the case where I mentioned, remember the individual who lost like 370,000?
Right.
He was very unhappy with the settlement, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
And he said, I want to go on social media and tell them tell the world what these people are really like. And we said, well, if you do that, the agreement's null and void, and you can be stuffed.
Yeah.
You know, worse to that effect. Yeah. I didn't quite say that.
I was going to say that sounds like the official version. You're stuffed if you do that, mate.
Sometimes it's much easier to say what you think. I think that's what we, I can't remember, maybe those words.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's deadly serious, and you're in breach of agreement and all hell's let loose.
Yeah. Do you think there's more, people are more willing to go to mediation now rather than court? Do you think there is a shift towards that because of the high cost of going to court and the risk that you come away with nothing if you go to court?
I think there is. Where I think there's a dependency upon the solicitors who understand that mediation really can work. Solicitors do try to get settlements, by the way, contrary to common belief, where they you know, try to keep the meter running. But they do work very hard to get settlements for all kinds of reasons. So it depends upon the judgment of a solicitor if it's gone that far, upon whether mediation is the right thing to do at that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, generally there's an awareness of how mediation can work. I think there's sometimes a bit of a fear, because I can't work out why. Because people might think mediation, you know, you might be obliged to, you know, like an arbitrator, take a judgment or whatever. Yeah. But it's up to them; they're in control.
Yeah. Well, I suppose with solicitors, it's, I mean, we have an adversarial system, don't we? Anyway, let's be honest. But with the solicitor's batting for you, your solicitor's batting for you, so I suppose it's hard for them sometimes to reach a settlement because it, like for the other person, that solicitor's always going to be on your side and this solicitor's going to be on their side, whereas you're neutral.
That's right, yeah, and they do that, and the solicitors tell me that obviously that's what they engage to do. They sometimes say that their clients are the people who are the most, you know, can't pronounce it, most adversarial. How do you pronounce litigious?
Litigious, yeah.
So yeah, it works. Usually, it's a client who gets quite fired up.
Yeah.
You know, and wants to go and beat them up.
I suppose you're always going to get clients like that that just will not do mediation. Stop. They're just going to be. They're the ones that want to go and have their day in court, whatever it costs them. And sometimes it's not even about the money, is it? It's about just proving a point.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
Just can't get over it.
So do you get a lot of referral work from solicitors then?
I get some, yes. It can go circular. Like if I get someone comes and says, I want to mediate because the other people have been right, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Then if there's a point of law, I said earlier, then I have to refer them into a solicitor.
Okay.
And I do refer to solicitors for that reason. I get referral back.
Usually.
Yeah.
I suppose some solicitors, are they more open to mediation than others, would you say?
I think some are. I've got no hard evidence to prove that.
Yeah.
But some are more pro, can do that. Others are less so.
So what happens if someone gets, if they go to mediation, the agreement, they've come to a settlement, and then, so, I don't know, for argument's sake, the one person's due to pay the other person 10 grand, and then that person reneges on it and doesn't pay it. What recourse do they have after that if the settlement is not followed through on?
Well, first of all, settlement is a legal document.
Yeah.
And usually at that level, it's usually a result of some sort of court proceedings.
Right.
And then in breach of court.
Yeah.
A court order.
It would be in breach of court then. So they've got recourse after that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. But I have nothing to do with that.
No. I was just curious. That was always what happens at that stage. If they go to mediation, they get the agreement, and then it all falls out of bed after that.
Then it becomes a legally enforceable thing to chase it up.
So let me get this right. So they resolve. They sort out the mediation, or
they get a settlement.
They get a settlement to mediation. Mm-hmm. They don't settle. You get paid, which is obviously fine, which is all good. That's what it's all about. They break the agreement for whatever reason, and then they have to speak to another mediator
to court. No, it goes to court.
It goes straight to court.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it hasn't happened. I'm aware of. Once I've done my job and they've settled, don't forget the other key thing in mediation, unlike a court, is that they've agreed what goes into the settlement.
Of course.
So that's fundamental. Remember I said right at the start, it's a fundamental difference to have someone tell you what the settlement's going to be. They've actually signed up themselves voluntarily and of their free will and all the rest of it to this settlement. So the chance of them trying to get out of it are very difficult. Because they've agreed it, and
even if they've changed their mind,
well,
they're not allowed to do that.
No, I haven't. It might have happened, but I haven't heard of it. So, I have come across in mediation where someone was trying to pursue another avenue with a solicitor on something, but I don't know what happened to that. But that's rare. because the key thing about mediation, they both sign up to this settlement. And unlike an arbitration or whatever, well, I don't think there's appeal against that. But they, and that's key. It's fundamental what you've highlighted. They both agree. It's their settlement. And the chances are, like I mentioned this case, a tenant and a landlord. Mm. If they won't, you know, think they don't want to do it, they don't. There's no settlement. And that's the point at which they realise what the implications are, either sums of money or some other process.
So you've never had any so you've got 100% success rate then?
In terms of?
In terms of getting everyone to a completed mediation point.
A completed mediation, but I've you know, had a case where, you know, they haven't settled.
Only one.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I'm wonderful. Anyway, I'm just
being of
course, I'm God's gift to mankind.
Everyone should use you for mediation, shouldn't they?
I know, yeah. Yeah, I'll pay you afterwards, sonny, yeah. Is that right? Suitcase full of 50 quid notes, yeah.
So what is it about people, do you think, that gets them so het up about these things, to the point of almost being ridiculous, you know, like... if you look at it from the outside in, you think, why are you getting so emotionally overwrought with this stuff? But well, for them, it's obviously really, really important.
It is. I mean, usually it builds up over time.
Yeah.
And remember, these things don't happen overnight. Yeah. Like take the contractor and the household. This one's something that a beam fell on someone's head.
Yeah.
It usually builds up over time. Usually there's been some sort of dialogue building up or not.
Yeah.
And usually words exchanged, as they say in a trade. So it's built up over time, and what happens in communication is that there's what miscommunication. People take the wrong line, and so it starts to escalate. That's the usual result of escalating miscommunication, with such a word, and that's why the emotion builds up. You know that, you know, and especially neighbour disputes. So and that's why things start to build up. And the emotion builds up.
Like you say, those neighbour disputes can be really, you know, neighbours can be horrible to each other, God, can't they?
Oh, well, there's press reports. Remember, someone kicked a football over a fence, and next thing you know, they're in court for about 50 grand or something. And another one had not one I've been involved in, this is in press. Is it neighbours, what they have, a problem over a fence?
Yeah.
A boundary fence, and 400 came to about nearly £500,000 in damages and costs.
Oh, it's insane the amount of money people spend on that.
And I'm actually also... I'm a volunteer mediator with Brighton Hove Independent Mediation Service here in Brighton, and also in Hastings. And there's some neighbour disputes there, and you know, which I do as a volunteer mediator. And they're quite interesting. It's usually have a noise, something similar, and people get, you know, and usually it's not the noise or the fence, it's the relationship, the communication that breaks down.
Mm.
And so you have to arrive at a way of dealing with that.
Yeah, I suppose that's it. It's the communication as much as anything, because a lot of these things, speaking from personal experience with neighbours, but, you know, if you go, well, I think if you talk politely and nice, I'm not going to tell the story, but when you talk politely and nicely to them, it's much better. It can be resolved and it takes the heat out of it. But some neighbours don't want to do that, and they're like always trying to ramp it up and escalate it even more.
Absolutely big time. And slipping back to my bad old days of coaching, there's a great book called The Chimp Paradox.
Yeah.
And he talks about our brain as a chimp, which is the emotional bit. And if you get two chimps talking to each other, that's it, goodbye and thank you.
Yeah.
And therefore, the thing is not, it's to control and manage the chimp in you.
Yeah.
And it's I've always remembered that. It's a great way of looking at the brain. Yeah. So, not suggest you've got a chimp in your brain.
Well, maybe I have. Who knows? quite possibly. I know, obviously, you can't sort of talk about details, but have you had any really, really, really weird mediations that you've had to do that you've just thought, oh, my God, I feel like I'm in a parallel universe right now?
You might think that. I couldn't possibly comment. there have, I mean, there have been some where usually there's a relationship between a man and a woman involved.
Yeah.
That then you get strange behaviours coming in. You do wonder why people say they certain things or do certain things. I'm not about sort of getting passionate on the table or anything. And at least that hasn't happened to me, in a mediation. That'd be, I'll stand back and watch. Maybe not. No, think about it. Maybe not. So, you do get some behaviours which, you have to think, whoa, you know, what goes on here?
I suppose that's the thing when you, especially if you've got a couple, like you said about the one where they had a property portfolio and the relationship broke down, they've got to deal with it, then there is definitely an element of wanting to say their piece. And I speak as having gone through a divorce, and you end up saying to your solicitor things like, oh yeah, and he did this and da 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 and blah blah blah, and the solicitor's like, don't care about any of that. It really, they don't care what they've done, who they've been with, etc. It's all about getting the settlement organised.
It is. What I tend to do though is to let people say it. Because as I said earlier, if you don't, they sit there.
Yeah.
And festering.
Yeah.
And whether it's right or wrong, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so you have to, I find, perhaps, I don't think all mediators do this, I think you do have to discharge the emotion.
Yeah, it's just letting them get it off the chest, even though it doesn't lead to anything.
And if it's in a private room, as it were, they can say whatever they want.
Yeah.
Sometimes they say it when they're together, but you have to control that. And so, I think it's very important. We're human beings.
Yeah.
We're all chimps at heart. The chimp is the most powerful part of our body.
Wow. What would you say is kind of the most important lesson you've learned over the course of your career? Because I know obviously it's been.
You nearly said varied. A few years.
Thank
you.
Varied.
A few years.
I meant to say
varied.
I didn't say you. Can we edit that out, Martin? We can just put a beep there, okay? Fucking help again.
No, I couldn't help it.
How many beeps are we going to need?
Yeah. Anyway, but no. I think the most important thing I've learnt. Just be yourself.
Yeah.
It sounds a terrible cliche, but I've in my coaching days, I told, isn't that a fantastic coach? Be like them, or follow the 6-step point to being, brilliant salesman or whatever. And it's just nonsense. In the end, you have to be natural or be authentic. That's the word, isn't it? If you're not, people see it. So there's no harm in trying to be or read up on the 6 points, whatever it is, or look at how good they are. But in the end, you've got to be yourself. Whatever that is, and unless you are yourself, it comes across as you're not authentic, and that's what I've learned. I've tried to do all kinds of things, trust me, and not be authentic, and they don't work. I've tried it; it doesn't work.
So be authentic.
Yeah. So is mediation quite stressful at times on you? Do you feel like the brain drain after you've been through several hours of mediation?
Yeah. Because it's absolute 100% concentration. Yeah. And it's the phrase I use is active listening.
Yeah.
Now, that's not meant to be a note of all bullshit, because most people listen. You listen, then you wonder what you're going to say at the end of it. Active listening is purely on what the person is saying.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
And that's really demanding, or I think it is.
Yeah.
Because it's 100% concentration.
It's very focused, isn't it?
You've really got to think what they're saying. Yeah.
So how do you sort of detach yourself or relax after that? Sort of, once you've done mediation, what do you do to sort of get away from mediation?
We got a cat. I go and kill the cat. No, I don't. No, I don't go and kill. I just go home and just, just relax. I don't think about it as such. Just descale. I descale.
Yeah.
I've just got a way of doing it. To sit and relax.
Is that your cat on your website? With
the
cat on?
That's what we were laughing about. I'm sorry.
Which cat is that?
There's a little grumpy cat.
No, it isn't.
We were both looking at it earlier. We're like, is that his cat?
No, really pissed off cat, isn't it?
He looks really unhappy. He's obviously not been to mediation. He's
No, he's heard too much. No, we no, we have a very nice tabby cat who's generally in a good mood.
Doesn't wear a little trilby hat either.
No.
That was gingerbread.
I'm good, but I'm not that good. No, it's definitely not a gingerbread cat. No, I just wonder, because it is a lot to sort of, take in. And I find, I don't know, it's not probably not the same thing, but sometimes when I've been teaching classes and stuff of, focusing on teaching gingerbread, it's really focused and you're focusing just on that, and it's not as long as what you do or as serious by any means. But afterwards I come out going, whoa, I actually feel sort of like my head's about...
Yeah. I usually sort of think over what happened in the process and the outcome.
Yeah.
And also I try to think what I said or didn't say.
Yeah.
And should I have said that or not said that? I go through a process in my head of thinking what happened. And that's a process of descaling.
Yeah.
Is that a word, I think?
Yeah, I guess
And that's how it is. I think about stuff. I reflect. Yeah. I mean, I re, I do a lot of reflection in what I do in my life.
Yeah.
I reflect upon stuff.
So are you looking to grow your mediation business, or are you sort of happy at the level it's at doing mediation?
I'm very happy where I am.
At the moment,
Happy person. Yeah. I just need to sit where I am. I don't have 10 mediators all working for me or whatever.
No.
I'll stick where I am. That's where I'm going to be.
So, you know, we're sort of coming towards the end of the podcast now. So just thought I'd ask you a few more questions about yourself, Andrew, rather than just mediation.
Oops.
Going to delve deep now. why did you become? What was your earliest childhood memory, actually? Seriously, what were you like as a child? What was your earliest childhood memory?
I have lots of childhood memories, but the one that sticks out was I'm a sailor. We have boats. We've always had boats. When I was about 10 or 8, I can't remember. We were sailing with my dad and my brother and a dog.
Yeah.
In what is called a sailing whaler.
Okay.
I don't know if you know whalers, which you've seen on film, but this had a sail on it. It's designed for it. And going right out into the western approaches, out to sea beyond Plymouth Sound. And it's, you know, howling, it's stiff weather, but my boat is beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was a really enjoyable experience. It's hard to explain why, but it just was a great feeling being at sea. No other boats could go out to sea. We're the only ones there, open boat. And it was absolutely fantastic feeling. I still remember it. And it's my last, and affects partly why I still go sailing when I can.
I was going to say, do you still sail now?
Not now, no. We had a yacht, but we had sell it in the end.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. Sailed out to Southampton.
Yeah.
We were gin and tonic sailors, anything more than 10 degrees back to port.
There's nothing wrong with that, I don't think.
No. One of the members of the Worthing Hub, Janet, she has a yacht.
Oh, I must go and get to know her.
You should. Yeah. You should. I mean, introduce you.
Yeah.
Yeah, sailing is lovely when the weather's good, definitely. Not so much when it's
No, it can get a bit stormy. Bit lively, yeah. Much more fun, yeah.
Where did you do that then? Did you say Plymouth, was that?
No, the whaler was in Plymouth. We lived in Plymouth for a time.
Okay.
But we had our yacht in Southampton quite a time.
Yeah.
You know, the Solum, it's like a huge lake, beautiful.
Yeah,
And we had a great time.
Well, it's quite, obviously we've got the marina in Brighton, but from what I know, it's quite a lot of money to berth the boat there, isn't it?
$5,000 a year. We were paying £600 a year to keep our boat. Yeah.
What's it they say, the best two days of owning a boat are the day you buy it and the day you sell it, isn't that right?
Unfortunately, that's true. Yeah, you don't have to get through it.
You spend a lot of money on it.
Easily, but it's good fun.
Yeah.
We enjoyed it.
Yeah. And so if you can be remembered for one thing, Andrew, what would it be, do you think?
The best way to paraphrase it is just helping people to get to where they want to be. I've always done that.
Yeah.
Mediation, going backwards, mediation does that. Coaching, certainly.
Yeah.
And in all my previous roles I've held, when we set a business home in Brighton, was actually helping people to get where they want to be.
Yeah.
So that's actually like, literally, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I don't make judgments about people, whatever that is.
It does seem to be the case that all these different roles you've had over your varied careers have all been about helping people achieve a result of some
sort.
That's
what I do. You get a lot of satisfaction from it.
Yeah. Brilliant. Great. Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I think we're more or less coming to the end of the interview now. I'm going to ask you one last question, actually, of what three books would you recommend to the audience and why? Because you've had a lot of experience around mediation and helping people. You must have some ideas about really good books that benefit people too.
I think one of them is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Oh, I don't know that one.
It's absolutely amazing. Yeah. It's a kind of self-help book, but it's written in the 1920s, 30s, end of the Depression.
Okay.
And it's a bit raw.
Yeah.
It's very politically incorrect.
Okay.
And if you get the first edition, not the later edition, they edited it, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely brilliant. Talks about, amongst other things, about the power of affirmations, believing what you do. And it gives examples. Amazing book.
Yeah.
It's a bit raw, but very direct.
Yeah. It's interesting that it covers the power of affirmations, because you kind of think of that as being a modern kind of phenomenon, but clearly it's not.
No. A lot of this stuff was put together in the 20s and 30s, at least as far as I can tell.
Uh-huh.
And it's really, 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 really good stuff. The other book, there's a couple of others, it's The Jelly Effect by Andy Bounds.
Right.
It's partly sales, but it's about... You know how you talk to people, you think about yourself.
Yeah.
I really must have that order. Please give me that order. You know that feeling?
With that voice.
That's enough to scare the shit out of anyone, isn't it?
Right, but I'm not going to the cinema again.
But it works when you do it like, say it like that. And what he says is, of course, people aren't interested in you. They don't give a stuff. What they want to know is what they're going to get from you.
Yeah.
He has something called the after effect. It's very entertaining. I've heard him speak.
Yeah.
He's funny. He's a short, fat, balding, livered pudding, which he himself said.
Okay.
I can't get done for that.
Fair enough.
So, and that's, I think that those are the two books. The final book is something I still remember it and still read. I still read some of this stuff again. It's called Atomic Habits by James Clear.
Oh, and yeah. I haven't finished it yet.
I've heard him speak. The reason I like that, you know, here have all these people have, I've got to have a grand strategy for my business or a 50-year plan. It's all bollocks.
Yeah.
That's all nonsense. and what he said, you do little things. Start little habits. I think that's such a great idea. And I'm a huge believer in that. Start small without going these stupid big things.
Yeah.
No one believes them. I've done the corporate plans. Yeah. No one believes them.
No.
So
when they ask you to do a business plan and that, and like you've got to forecast a year ahead, you might have a good idea for a year, but 2 years, 3 years, most of it's just like pulling numbers out of the air, isn't
have
it?
But when it comes to actually doing stuff, then you have to. It's about doing lots of little things to change it.
It's that 1% better, 1% more every day,
right.
Or consistency, whatever you want to call it. But it's the same with changing any habit, I think. Like when I talk about diet, sorry, I'm not going to moan about diet, Sonny.
No, it's all right. You've already said about this before, about changing my habits.
No, it's, it is. I know. It's,
what
it's,
sort of habits are those?
I'm not going into that in this podcast.
The ball gag. Sorry.
Thanks, Martin. Thanks a lot. Thanks for laughing your head off over there. Cheers, mate.
Oh, I can't talk now. No, honestly, it's about little habits, whatever it is. It's about doing those small things, because those small things, 1% every day adds up to a lot of percent over a period of time,
absolutely.
Isn't it?
So I've learned that. It's so important. That's the three books. It's such a... Do you think of the habits?
No, I can think of something with the ball gag got that image.
I have no words. I'm just going to let you finish.
On that note, I think it's time to wrap up this podcast. It's been brilliant talking to you, Andrew, and finding all about mediation and what drives you and what drives mediation. Yeah. It's been really useful, and I'm sure lots of people will listen to it and hopefully turn to mediation rather than arbitration or court in future.
Absolutely. It's a way to go.
Yeah.
It's a way
to go. Well, thank you for your time. Andrew.
That's right. No,
not
it's
so
been great fun.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Cheers. Bye.
Hubbub, the Directors Hub podcast, sponsored by the Sussex Business Show.